Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the Corey Leanish podcast. I'm your host, Zach Lowy, here today with a very special guest, Tiago Coimbra, who is in charge of the communications department at Portimonech. So far, you know, this season at Corey Leanish, we've had the chance to discuss quite a few teams. We've had some team-centric podcasts, not just the bigger clubs such as Porto, Sporting, and Benfica, but been going for somewhat smaller clubs lately. Famalicão, Boa Vista, we did last week with José Pedro Paes, Santa Clara. We've been going over some smaller clubs, so I'm really excited to have Thiago on today to discuss Portimonense, because for me, they have been one of the biggest revelations of this season in Portugal. So how are you today, Thiago?
Hello, good afternoon. I'm fine today, yeah. A bit nervous for the game today, but I'm fine, yeah.
Right, of course, Portimonense taking on Vitória de Guimarães. Going to be a really interesting game. What are your expectations going into today's game?
So today's game is a hard game. It's a tough game because Vitória has the same points. We have the same points as Vitória. And we came from a bad moment. So I don't know what to expect. The team in Portimão is not playing what's supposed to play. Vitória have the motivation of facing a team with these problems. And I think it will be a hard game to Portimonense, but I hope that we win and have the fifth place today.
Of course, as you mentioned, not a great run of form for Portimonense lately. We've seen over the past 2 weeks, After Portimonense, after 10 men, Portimonense defeated Famalicão on penalties to advance in the Taça de Portugal round of 16. We've seen Portimonense lose to Sporting. No shame in that, of course. Portimonense going down to 10 men in the 58th minute there. Then losing 2-1 to Marítimo before being knocked out of the Taça de Portugal to second division side Mafra, who have been an absolutely fascinating story. Mafra, they've going to be playing in the Taça de Portugal semifinals against Tondela. So there is a chance that they could be in that final in Jamor against one of Porto and Sporting. What would you say have been the biggest reasons for Portimonense's poor run of form? Obviously, only three games, so definitely not a crisis by any stretch. But what do you think have been some of the reasons for this poor run of form?
So I'll separate the exhibition for the league, and I'll separate the Taça de Portugal game. So I think the team played well for the league. Like the as you shame, there's no shame. As you said, there's no shame of losing to Sporting. It was a bit of luck, the 10 man, and that's just playing against Sporting an awful lot. That's hard. The Marítimo problem, I think it was the incapacity of the team, the incapacity to score. The team only scored one goal, had many chances, and Marítimo had two attacks and scored two goals. One from an individual mistake, and the second from a counter-attack at the final of the game when Portimonense was trying to win the game. The Mafra game was different. Mafra came as an outsider and scored from individual mistakes again. In that case, two penalties and two individual mistakes from Pedrão and Angulo. And I think Paulo Sérgio made a big mistake too. He took off Sá and Carlinhos at the mid-time and he lost completely the midfield. The team couldn't construct, and that was the second half problem. That is, I think the team can solve these problems is some little mistakes, little individual problems, and I think it can be solved.
Absolutely. Hopefully a good result today against Vitória de Guimarães. You mentioned, though, you know, some goal-scoring issues, and I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to make a quick detour. So one player who we've been talking about a lot on Corte Linhas over the past year since we launched this podcast, we're approaching the one-year mark at Corte Linhas, is Beto. Beto, one of the biggest revelations of the league season last season in Portugal, otherwise known as Norberto Berchique Gomes Betunçal. And I highly recommend, if you haven't yet, check out Vito Doria's article on Beto on the website that we just published with regards to his performances at Udinese, as well as the latest Rompiendo Lineas, our Spanish language podcast that was just published regarding Beto. Two pieces of Beto content. One's a Spanish podcast, one's an English language article. Both very good to get a depiction of his performances in Italy. But Beto, you know, one of the biggest revelations for Portimonense last season, did very well, started the season well at Portimonense, but when he learned of Udinese's interest, he forced a move, ended up joining Udinese on a season-long loan with an option to buy, and has been quite good for the Italian club. Are you surprised at all by how Beto is doing at Udinese?
No surprising at all. Beto had a great evolution here in Portimonense, and it's normal to do that. Beto has a great potential. He's not even at his best. He can do better. He can improve more. But Beto is a complete beast, and I think it's not surprising for anyone that Beto is making this season at Udinese.
Right, and going on to how Portimonense have replaced them, you know, we've talked a bit about, you know, their replacements. Wellington Aponsa, a player who I think has done fairly well, the Colombian striker. Few other options, of course, likes of, we've seen Aponsa, obviously one striker. We've also seen the Brazilian forward Fabricio, who has joined on loan from Urara Red Diamonds in the Japanese side. So it's been interesting how they've tried to replace him. Do you feel that Portimonense have done a good job of replacing Beto? And to another degree, how do you think they have felt his absence?
I think that Portimonense didn't replace Beto. So talking of Aponsa is similar to Beto, but he suffers for the same problems that Beto felt at the beginning. The ball control problems, the finishing problems. And I think Portimonense changed his way to play by making Fabricio his number 9. So Fabricio is a fake 9. Fabricio plays as a pivot to open the wingers, like in this case, Ailton. And that's a fact. Portimonense last year played for Beto, and this year Fabricio is playing for the teammates. I think that's a big difference.
That is a very interesting thing you said, you know. And I think that what you mentioned, the false 9 role, that's something that we've seen, you know, to a degree with teams such as Manchester City, you know, obviously to a higher degree. But, you know, you have to take the good with the bad, I think, which is a really interesting point. I want to talk a little bit about this Portimonense side on a tactical level. That goes back to the manager. Above all, it goes back to the manager, Paolo Sergio. So Paolo Sergio has been managing for, I think, around 2 decades. I believe he has had some spells abroad. I think he managed Hearts in Scotland, Apoel in Cyprus, as well as a few teams in Asia. But returning to Portimonense in 2020 after a long spell abroad, I'm curious, what were your first reactions to Paolo Sergio's appointment as Portimonense manager?
So in 2020, when Paulo Sergio came, Portimonense was in crisis of results. Only 14 points in the middle of the season. And Antonio Folha, the last manager, went off that day. And when they announced Paulo Sergio, was like, Paulo Sergio came as a messiah, someone who came to save Portimonense from the relegation. That was the main goal. And of course, I saw Paulo Sergio last games. I saw Paulo Sergio tactics. And Paulo Sergio is and was a manager who likes 4-4-2. But in Portimonense, he hadn't got two strikers. So he made it a 4-3-3 and now a 4-2-3-1.
Yes, of course. And Portimonense, as you mentioned, they were in crisis. They were a second from the bottom at the time when he arrived, just before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and he did quite well, won Manager of the Month. But Portimonense ended up being relegated of course, Portimonense, and yet Paulo Sergio decided to stay with them. Portimonense ended up staying in the top flight due to Vitória de Setúbal's financial irregularities. Now, that moment, I think, is crucial because, you know, you're relegated, but then you're not relegated. Do you feel like there was any wake-up call for Portimonense at that time? You know, we came so close to going down. We should have gone down if it weren't for another team's financial problems. Do you feel like there was anything that the club did differently in the summer of 2020?
I think we have two wake-ups. The team wake-up was when Paulo Sergio came and the team shown a difference of attitude. With Antonio Folha not just faulting the team and not just blaming the manager, but so many things were wrong. And the attitude of the team was one of that problems. Paulo Sergio made it one of the good things of the team. The team is intense. The team goes to attack, likes to attack. And I think, yes, the administration saw that relegation with bad eyes, of course. And I don't think it was to go to the market and buy players, but look at the inside. Look to the inside. Look, okay, in under 23, we have this, and this player. They have a lot of potential. Let's bet on them. So, Portimonense, like, if these players were relegated, why not to try the young players? And that's how came Beto, Falikandé, Samuel, and other good players that are playing now for Portimonense.
Absolutely. You mentioned a few of them. I want to talk about Samuel Portugal because, you know, I think that Portimonense, they've had some very good results this season. None, definitely the highlight, though, the highlight of this season came on October 3rd when they faced off against Benfica at the Estádio da Luz, a Benfica team that had won every single game, I believe, prior to this match, had a perfect start and were, you know, flying on all cylinders under Jorge Jesus. Portimonense coming to the Estádio da Luz, taking the lead in the second half via a goal from Lucas Pocignolo and hanging on to their first ever win in the Estádio da Luz. This really was the beginning of the end for Benfica, who quickly came into a crisis mode. It's incredible to think that, you know, just 3 months after a perfect start under Jorge Jesus, one, Jorge Jesus isn't the manager anymore, and two, they really aren't even in the title race anymore. It's turned into what it was last season, a two-horse race rather than a three-horse race. So absolutely a monumental result. And this was a game where Benfica were the better side, I would say. I think Benfica, 24 shots to Portimonense's 5, 7 shots on targets, Portimonense's 3, 69% possession to Portimonense's 31. But the biggest reason for me, the biggest reason why Portimonense were able to advance with 3 points is Samuel Portugal, who had an absolutely phenomenal match in goal for Portimonense. You know, for me, I definitely think that he has been one of the better goalkeepers in Portugal over the past 2 years. Samuel Portugal, ironically, a Brazilian goalkeeper who arrived at the Algarvian club in 2019. What are your thoughts on Samuel? How important has he been between the sticks? Do you think he could potentially get a bigger move soon?
So, I think at this moment, Samuel and Ziga from Gil Vicente are the best goalkeeper in the league. So, I like to call him the goalkeeper of the impossible saves. He is good outside the goal, but between the posts, he's enormous. And for big markets, yeah, I think Samuel last year was almost going to Italy for 20 million. And that's a matter of time. I think that in the end of the season, Samuel is going to another club for a big budget. And yeah, Samuel has been pretty important to Portimonense. Every game he have an important save. Every game he's pretty important to the team.
Absolutely. Really a massive performance from Samuel this season. Another player you mentioned, Falikandé. Has been, you know, definitely one of the biggest revelations this season, and another player who could get a big move. Falikandé, born in Bissau, capital of Guinea-Bissau, moved to Portugal at a young age, had some time at Estrela da Amadora, Atlético Clube de Portugal, Casa Pia, Niendorfer, Porto, Benfica's B team, before eventually making his way to Portimonense in 2018. Been really important as a left back slash left wing back this season. And, you know, currently away in Cameroon for the Africa Cup of Nations. How good has Wally Kanté been? What do you think his ceiling is? Still just 23 years old. What do you think makes him such a special talent at left back?
Okay, I think Wally has some defensive difficulties, but offensively he's great. He combines a lot of speed and an excellent physique, so he can beat the opposition on one against one. Wally Kanté was one of the players that came with Paul Sergio. It wasn't a battle of Portimonense, but when Paul Sergio came in 2020, Wally Kanté started playing for the main team. I think the fact that Wally being on the African Cup of Nations, Portimonense do not have a direct reposition. Filipe Relvas is a center back, and the other left back, Lazard, is injured. So Portimonense lost a part of the system. Sometimes they play with three center backs and Angulo making the wing. Sometimes they just put Relvas in that position. I think that Wally has got a lot of potential. He can improve the defensive part. The Portimonense, I think that hadn't have some proposals on him, big proposals on him yet. I think he would stay one more year in Portugal, two more years in Portugal, so he can go to big countries, big leagues, and be a great left back. He had the potential for that.
Absolutely. And on the other side of defense, we've seen Fab Moufi, a player born in France, but has played for Morocco's youth teams, has not been called up for the Africa Cup of Nations, but been quite impressive for Portimonense after joining from Tondela in 2020. 25 years old, so still fairly young as well. And for me, has been one of the better right backs of the season. What are your thoughts on Moufi?
I think intensity is the word that describes Moufi the most. He's similar to Fali, but better at defending. And he came to solve a problem with right backs in Portimonense. Portimonense had Ricardo Pessoa, a 12-year captain. But after Ricardo, Portimonense suffered a lot in the right wing. And Moufi came to solve the defensive problems and be one more row to attack. So he's very intense, he likes to attack. And Paul Sergio gives him the entire right wing. So Ailton moves to the middle and Moufi have the wing. And now in the last few games, Moufi had some important passes, direct passes to Ailton, the assist in Famalicão for the league. And he has great numbers, like 1.2 key passes per game. He wins 60% of the defensive duels and have an average 4.1 defensive actions per game. So he's very intense. He likes to attack, he likes to defend. And Moufi is one of the greatest right backs of the league too, and he came to solve a problem. One more player that two more years, and are in a great league. He's as you said, 25 years, a lot of potential, and Moufi was a great signing from Portimonense.
Definitely, a lot of interesting moves for Portimonense over the past few years. One player who I think has been worthy of a mention and for me been very impressive, hasn't always been on top of people's radar, but I think has really come into his own over the past season, is Pedrão, 24 years old, born in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and I believe on loan from Palmeiras. So Pedro Henrique, or Pedrão, coming in to Portimonense and has been very well in the center of defense and definitely contributing a big role to their impressive defensive record alongside Fad Moufi, Lucas Pocignolo, Wally Kanté, and Samuel Portugal. What do you make of Pedrão's performances in the center of defense for Portimonense?
At first, I would like to highlight the defensive duos and all the three center backs, Pedrão, Pocignolo, and William. But ignoring the last game against Mafra that everyone has bad games, Pedrão added constancy to Portimonense's defensive sector. Portimonense always conceded many goals due to individual mistakes, And Pedon came to correct that. He is a complete player with his feet, he can attack too. Don't commit any mistakes, and that's what makes him a great center back. Saying one more time, Portimonense had much problems to defend in the past years, and Pedon came as a huge center back to solve that problems. I think that's what Portimonense has been doing as the last years, as solving positional problems. This position is not right, came Fally Kandé. This position is not right, came Samuel. This position is not right, came Pedrão. And that's how Portimonense has been doing in the last years. And Pedrão is being important for the defensive record, as I told, as the other defenders.
A lot of Brazilians in the Portimonense side. One player who I want to talk about is Lucas Fernandes, 24 years old. Came through Sao Paulo's academy before joining Portimonense in 2018. I think has been a player who has definitely been on my radar for a while, and has had a few impressive performances. Hasn't always started, but I think he's been quite interesting for this Portimonense team. You know, it was just a few years back in 2016 when he was considered to be a really impressive prospect in Sao Paulo's academy, alongside the likes of Eder Militao, David Neres, Luis Araujo. Hasn't quite managed to hit the same heights as them, obviously. But what are your thoughts on Lucas Fernandes?
I think Lucas is capable of the best and the worst. Lucas is a creative player who is great, but a great creative player. But he has a lot of problems, starting with his attitude. Sometimes he do not run as the other ones. He don't like to play. It seems sometimes he doesn't like to play. He just stay with the ball, pass here, but when he has to attack, when he has to say, okay, now it's my turn, let's go, he can't do that. So Lucas have some nice games and some bad games. And this season, I think Lucas hasn't been on his top. He had a great game against Santa Clara with one assist and one goal. But after that, Lucas has lost himself, and Portimonense with Carlinhos, that is more constant, there is more intense. Lucas has lost his pace. And he's not being capable to return to be an initial player. And I think that's part of the difference of the success in that team of São Paulo, that some players became the greatest players on the world, and Lucas Fernandes playing on Portimonense. I think that's one of the biggest differences, is the attitude and the will to play.
Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. Lucas Fernandes, as you mentioned, that Santa Clara game was very impressive there, but consistency, that's the biggest thing. That's going to be that's really going to determine whether he can make the step up to the next level. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Another player who I wanted to mention, another player in midfield who I definitely wanted to mention, is Gianelli Imbula. So Imbula has had quite a fascinating story. Born in Belgium, two Congolese parents, moved to Paris at a young age, you know, bounced around several French clubs before making his way to Marseille, where he impressed under Marcelo Bielsa, playing alongside likes of André Ayew, André Pierre Gignac, Dimitri Payet, doing quite well and earning the interest from Porto, who signed him in 2015 for a club record 20 million euros. This was without a doubt one of the worst deals in Porto's history. He frankly did not do anything of note for the Dragões, and just around, I think, 6-7 months later, ended up joining Stoke City in the Premier League for a club record 24 million euros, and really did not manage to do much for the English club. Ended up getting dropped quite often and being criticized for his attitude. You know, a very poor run of form that saw him go out on loan several times, some spells in Italy, Spain, France, and Russia before joining Portimonense in March of 2021. Wasn't able to play for them until the start of this season, of course, but quite an interesting career arc for Imbula, who is still just 29 years of age. I'm curious, what have you made of Imbula so far for Portimonense?
Imbula is not the starting option for defensive midfield, he's the captain. Or William Rocha, that is a centre-back that plays there much times. Imbula is like when Portimonense is winning or when Portimonense is with a good result, Imbula comes to give body to the midfield. He's not the fastest player, he's not the greatest player, but he can defend, he's big. And I think that's the function in Imbula in Portimonense. Not starting, not making the other players play, but defend and maintain the result.
Of course, yeah. Imbula will be interesting to see what happens with this Portimonense side. I think that, it'll be interesting because he has been a talented player on his day, but definitely has not made the right career choices. Another player who, super talented, super aesthetically pleasing, but has really ruined his career with some bad career choices, is Shoya Nakajima. So Nakajima, coming through Japan, playing for a variety of Japanese clubs such as Tokyo Verdy, FC Tokyo, Kataler Toyama, before eventually joining Portimonense in 2017. And looking back at that 2018-19 season for the Algarvian side, he was just absolutely phenomenal, really one of the best players of that league season. You definitely felt like watching this player, he had the world at his feet, but decided to join Qatari side Al-Duhail for a reported transfer fee of 35 million euros, playing just 7 games for them and scoring once before joining Porto just a few months later in an interesting economic agreement that saw him go for 12 million euro transfer fee, 50% of his economic rights, and signing a contract that saw him have an 80 million euro release clause. This really did not work out at all at Porto. He never quite managed to gel under Sergio Conceição. Obviously, plenty of talented players ahead of him, but it didn't seem like it was ever going to work with him. And Conceição eventually ended up going back to the Middle East and joining Al Ain on a 6-month loan deal, including a option to buy for 40 million euros. And he had a very tough injury that saw him break his tibia, and then eventually returning to Portimonense this past summer. So Nakajima, another player who, a ridiculously talented player, but who perhaps has not hit the heights that you would have expected of him at 27 years of age. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Nakajima's return to Portimonense?
Speaking as a young supporter, but I've been told for 40 years person, Nakajima is one of the best players ever to play in Portimonense. And so he's magical, he has a great talent, and the return of Nakajima was very positive to Portimonense. Because when Beto left, Portimonense had a problem with a reference player, and the reference player now is Nakajima. Of course, as I told, Portimonense changed his way to play, and Nakajima is the brain of the game. He has enormous tactical importance. When he came in 2017, he played as a winger, but now he's an offensive midfielder. And he is returning to the level that we used to in Portimão. Nakajima is great. Nakajima this year is, as I told, returning to be the Nakajima. And I think the answer is the environment. Nakajima here as a translator, Nakajima here as a conditions. And in Porto, in Al-Duhail, Nakajima was alone. Nakajima do not speak English. Nakajima do not speak Portuguese. Nakajima only knows how to speak Japanese. And that is does not help on his career. So here in Portimão, he have the conditions, he have someone who cares about him. In Porto, it was only one more player. In Alduail, it was a great player, but the environment was not the greatest for him. So in Portimão, he has all the conditions to be the happy player, to be the greatest player, the talented player that he used to.
I'm curious, what are the connections between Portimonense and Japan? Because, you know, there are several Japanese players in this team, apart from Nakajima, Shuhei Kawasaki, Kozuke Nakamura, as well as some other players who have, you know, played for Japanese teams, such as we mentioned Fabrizio, Everton, and if, of course, a few other players in the youth team. I think you've got Yuta Nakano and Toki Hirosawa in the U23 team. I'm curious, what is the reasoning behind Portimonense's Japanese connection?
The answer is pretty simple, and the Japanese connection and the Brazilian connection has one name, that is Teodoro Fonseca, the main actionist of Portimonense. So Portimonense likes to go, as you know, to the Brazilian markets, to the Japanese markets, because that's the when Teodoro started to play, when Teodoro started to work, he started to work in Japan, he started to work in Brazil, that there are markets that he knows pretty well. Like the publicity of Portimonense, the main publicity is from Japan, is Cerimoni, and that man is also an actionist of Portimonense, and that is the connection. And Nakajima, one of the pioneers on that connection, and it went so well that I think that Teodoro and the Portimonense administration is trying to find another Nakajima.
Absolutely, that's really interesting, for sure. I think that it will be tough to find another Nakajima, but you know, we'll just have to see. I'm curious what another connection that I've always wondered about. There's a connection between Porto and Portimonense, because we've seen quite a lot of business that has been done between the two teams over the past few years. I think that it's hard to find many teams that have had, you know, just so many transfers between the two teams. I'm trying to think of Nakajima, obviously, is one of them who joined on loan from Porto, but you know, it's definitely been a lot of interesting connections between the two sides, and you know, just so many transfers between the two teams. What do you think has been the biggest reason behind Porto and Portimonense's transfer connections?
So it's known that the new administration, this administration, has good relations with the Porto administration due to, as I told, Teodoro Fonseca, that is also an actionist of Futebol Clube do Porto. And that is one of the keys of this relation. The clubs have good relations. And when a player in Portimonense is a highlight, of course, the three biggest clubs in Portugal want him, and Porto is one of the biggest sharks to want our players, and that's the reason the clubs have good relations. Every season Portimonense has a player that is a highlight, and Tabata joined Sporting, but the others, Paulinho, Everton, Nakajima, really joined Porto, and that's fact, that the reason is that good relations. Yes,
of course. I also, you know, I noticed a recent transfer news. Obviously, Portimonense having some very impressive players that are getting attention from bigger clubs. I saw a report from Pedro Sepulveda, who said that Portimonense are set to sell Ailton Boamort to Itihad Cabal, I think, Itihad Kalba, That would be the name. Another Middle Eastern side, Boamort, set to sign a contract of 3.5 seasons. Are you able to confirm those details? Do you think that Boamort will leave? And if he does leave, you know, been a very important veteran leader in this attack, how big of a blow do you think that will be to Portimonense?
So I think I can give you the news that at this moment, the conversations between Ailton and the club are not on the best moments. The Portimonense and the club had an agreement, but Ailton, I don't think so. Let's wait for the next days to confirm. So Ailton is a very important player, and he can do the both functions as winger and the main character in Portimonense attack, the two, Fabrício being the fake nine. And he's another player who have some problems, finishing problems, big finishing problems. Like, he's fast, he is capable of the best and the worst. He have the greatest finishing and the worst finishing. And I think Portimonense can't replace Ailton in some phases of the game. The speed, the capacity of a peer. It's right that Ailton fails a lot, but Ailton appears a lot. If he has a lower percentage of goals, he will also score, because he will shoot a lot. And that part is different. Portimonense have N'Golo, but N'Golo do not have this capacity of a peer. So it will be hard. Maybe Nakajima can go back to the wing, and Portimonense start using Luquinha, Lucas Fernandes, or Carlinho to be the main man of the midfield. And that's it. Ailton is important, have his problems, but is an unquestionable importance in the scene.
Absolutely. Moving on to some other non-Portimonense content. Taking a look at the weekend's games, we saw Santa Clara and Tondela sharing the spoils in a draw. Also saw Famalicão and Passos de Ferreira grinding out a draw. Boa Vista and Gil Vicente, a very entertaining game between two impressive teams in very good form, also grinding out a 1-1 draw at Porto. Marítimo pulling off a very impressive upset against Braga, and Sporting taking care of business in a 2-0 victory against Vizela, thanks to goals from Pedro Gonçalves and Daniel Bragança. Some other interesting games, of course. Benfica, though, perhaps the most surprising result of the weekend, ending up drawing to Maranhão. 1-1 draw, which we saw Benfica ending up conceding an own goal from Gilberto, dropping points, and Darwin Nunes tying it up just a few minutes later. But overall, not a very good performance from Benfica. An even worse result that pretty much confirms that, you know, it will be a two-horse race between Porto and Sporting. Doesn't look like Benfica are going to be able to make a push for the title for the second straight season. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on this Benfica performance? What do you think? Do you think that Benfica might invest in the January transfer window to salvage something? Obviously, you know, have been poor in domestic competitions over the past few months, but still alive in the Champions League. And, you know, I'm curious, do you think that they will end up, making a dip in the transfer window?
I agree with you when you say that Benfica is not fighting for the title anymore. But I think this season Benfica has a solution. That is something near of what Sporting did with Ruben Amorim. Benfica have great players in under-23, or at Benfica B, which is leading Liga 2, and they have Veríssimo, who work with a lot of these players as a manager. So I think this season, Benfica should bet on the young players, let them create routines, and some of them will be the near future of this team. So Sporting did this with a lot of young players from Academia, and Benfica can do this again with Seixal. They have enormous players, Paulo Bernardo, Henrique Araújo, and another talents. And there is many years Benfica have good prestations in Youth League, good results in B Team Under 23 Championship, and I think Benfica should look inside and not outside.
Absolutely, and another player, another talented young player that we saw, Paulo Bernardo, another product of the Benfica Academy, 19 years of age, starting in midfield. We also saw Morato playing in central defense, 20 years old. I think two players who could be very important for Benfica over the coming months as they try to salvage something from this season. The final game of the weekend, obviously we've still got this Portimonense and Vitória game, but the final game of the weekend, we saw first against last. Porto taking on Belenenses side in what was a pretty crazy game from start to finish. Abel Kamara putting Belenenses side up 1-0 within 13 minutes via a corner kick goal. Belenenses side having the players sent off. Svefelo Svitzel, very important in their midfield. The South African sent off within 33 minutes. Evan Nielsen tying things up within seconds after that. And we also saw just a few minutes later, Bruno Costa, who had been asked to play in the right back position due to the lack of options in that position. Bruno Costa being taken off in the 38th minute for Mehdi Taremi, and eventually Porto grabbing the decisive second goal from Evan Nielsen. Taremi adding just to that scoreline just a few minutes later. Evan Nielsen completing his hat trick. We also saw Abel Kamara, the scorer of the opening goal for Belenenses, getting sent off in the 91st minute. So very tough result for Belenenses in the Estadio de Jamor. But your thoughts on this Porto game?
Okay, so Porto has his fullbacks problem now due to the injury of Manafa. The Nanu was on African Cup of Nations but left. Tecatito left to Sevilla, and Porto have to go to the market and have a fullback. So I like to highlight Fabio Vieira, who made 3 assists and in this season have 7 assists. An average of 1 key pass per game, and on the last 4 games scored 2 goals and made 3 assists. And I think in this game, Fabio Vieira, on other games, Vitinha, Fabio Vieira was the most important key part for this win of Porto. Ivan Nilsson was great on finishing. Taremi played pretty well too, but I think the answer is Fabio Vieira.
Absolutely. I think Fabio Vieira playing in the central attacking midfield role in the 4-2-3-1, I think for me, the biggest standout of this match, Fabio Vieira, was arguably the best player of Portugal's U21 Euros last spring, and ended up renewing his contract alongside Diogo Costa. Hasn't really gotten much in the way of starting opportunities, but perhaps this game could be a turning point for him, because we all said that Vitor Ferreira or Vitinha would not get opportunities under Sergio Conceição. That has proven to be false, as Vitinha has managed to grind out a starting spot in midfield. Is there potential for them to coexist? I think if Conceição sticks with this 4-2-3-1, we've seen him opt for obviously the 4-4-2 a lot, sometimes even a 4-3-3. But if he sticks with this 4-2-3-1, I definitely think there is a space for Fabio Vieira. And you mentioned Tecatito Corona leaving for Sevilla. Tecatito, has had a great time at Porto, but has been very disappointing this season after failing to get a move to Sevilla in the summer window. I think that, without Corona, I think that one, Porto do need to invest and bring in a right back in the January window. Personally, I think that, especially with Nanu leaving for FC Dallas, I think that makes them a bit weaker. We'll see what happens, whether Conceição decides to trust someone from the academy or if he decides to bring someone in. Obviously, there's potential for someone like Tomáš Eštevez to get more minutes at the right back position. But I do think that Corona's sale will open up more opportunities to three players: Fabio Vieira, Pepe, the summer arrival from Grêmio, and Francisco Chico Conceição. Francisco Conceição, obviously the son of Sergio Conceição, coming on in the second half for Vitinha, and within seconds, setting up Evan Nielsen's goal. So I think that those three players will benefit massively. I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think that that those three players are good enough to fill Corona's departure?
I think yes. I see the 4-2-3-1 of Porto with Fabio Vieira and Vitinha together in the midfield. Uribe, Fabio Vieira, Vitinha being the center midfielder, the offensive midfielder. And the wings, I give to Luis Dias and Otavio. And I think Pepe could be a second option to Otavio. And I see Francisco Conceição as a game unlocker. So Porto in the last two games scored 7 goals, 4 of them with Conceição in the field. So on the last 200 minutes of Porto, Francisco Conceição played 45, scored 1 goal, assists other. He's fast, he likes individual initiatives, and I don't see him as an initial player, but I see him as a game unlocker.
Definitely. And another player I want to talk about a lot, another young, promising talent on this Porto team, 6 goals in his last 4 games, Evan Nielsen. Evan Nielsen, Brazilian forward who joined from Fluminense in the summer of 2020, really struggled for opportunities in his first season behind Musa Marega, Mery Taremi, and Tony Martinez, but has been absolutely fantastic, even starting last game over Mery Taremi. I do think that, considering that Conceição likes the 4-4-2, I think that he will continue to start alongside Taremi in the double strike role. Your thoughts on the Brazilian?
So when Evan Nielsen came, he came as the last option. He came with Tony Martinez, who didn't make it. He didn't play what's expected for him. Taremi is more on second forward in a 4-4-2 system. And I see now Evan Nielsen is the main character of the Porto attack. He's the man who have to score. He's him. And I think he's giving what is expected for him or more, because as I told, he came as the last option and now he's the first one. He's when you say the forward of Porto, you have to say Evan Nielsen. He's in a great form. He's easy finishing. And that's what makes him a great player and one of the highlights of Porto this season.
Definitely. Without any further ado, we're going to move on to the talent of the week section. My talent of the week is going to be a very promising young player who has been one of the biggest revelations, I think, of this league season. His name is Francisco Jorge Tavares Oliveira, or Chiquinho. Chiquinho is a 21-year-old winger who was born in Cascais in Lisbon, spent the bulk of his career at Sporting's academy, but ended up joining Estoril in 2019, played a decent-sized role in the previous season to lead Estoril to promotion, but has been definitely a lot more important this season for Estoril, who have been really one of the biggest revelations, going from playing in the second division to chasing European football under Bruno Pinheiro. And it seems as though Chiquinho's performances have earned him a big move. Chiquinho set to join Wolverhampton Wanderers, or Wolves, on a long-term deal for an initial fee of around £3 million. Chiquinho, I think it's a really interesting deal. And I've been talking about this a lot. I think a lot of teams outside of Portugal will almost wait for a player to impress on Benfica or Porto or Sporting before making that move. But by the time that they impress for one of the big three, their transfer fee will have just skyrocketed by 20 million, 30 million euros, you know. And this is where, you know, looking at teams like Estoril, Gil Vicente, Boa Vista, Portimonense, I think that's where you can find an opportunity for some massive bargains here. Because a team like Estoril, you know, they really won't be able to say no to a fee of that is as low as 3 million pounds. And, you know, Chiquinho, he hasn't always started for Estoril this season, but when he has, he has impressed me a lot. I think a really promising physical profile, has, you know, a very good dribbling ability, can change direction and get into goal-scoring positions very easily. I think there's even potential for him I think he will be eased into the first team setup under Bruno Lage, but I can see him getting some decent minutes. I think that Wolves, really, their biggest deficiency this season under Bruno Lage has been in attack. I think that, you know, Raul Jimenez has not had a very good return to action so far. Looking at other players such as Huang, Francisco Trincao, you know, I think that they are missing a good, really solid attacking profile. And Chiquinho is still very raw at just 21 years of age, but I think that he could end up being that guy. I think that there's a potential for him to play some minutes, especially with Pedro Neto continuing to be out due to injury. I think that he's impressive in 1v1 situations. He's got a lot of skill and physicality, and has impressed in quite a few games against likes of Porto and Famalicão. I think that what he will end up being, actually, looking at his profile, looking at what I've seen of him this season under Bruno Pinheiro, I think that he may end up being Adama Traore's long-term replacement. Your thoughts on Chiquinho?
Here, I'll have to agree with you. He's a fast player, a talented player with a good capacity on one against one. I think he was referenced to Portimonense 2 years ago. And the Premier League, I think it's perfect to him. Wolves is a perfect environment for him due to the Portuguese relations, due to the system, the necessity of a winger that appears on attack, a winger who is strong, who is fast. And I think Chiquinho would be the right player to solve the Wolves' problems. And this is an opportunity that Chiquinho wouldn't miss. 3 million pounds, 4.5 million euros, more or less. He's a good number, but Chiquinho have potential to be more expensive. But I think that not even Chiquinho wants to refuse this opportunity. It's an opportunity to jump to the Premier League, to a good club in England, and it's and that's it. I think Chiquinho could make it. It's hard. He's young. He never played for a big club. He plays for Estoril, that is making a great championship, but he doesn't have that experience against the big clubs, playing the big games. And let's see how he adapts to this situation and how he adapts to Wolverhampton to see if he makes it.
Absolutely. Do you have a talent of the week?
And playing against Portimonense, Rodrigo Martins from Mafra. He was a nightmare against Portimonense. If you have to say, due to this man, Mafra passed to the semifinals of the cup, this man is Rodrigo Martins. He was a nightmare to Pedrão. He was a nightmare to Mufi. He played very well. He was pretty strong in one against one. He was pretty strong. He scored a beautiful goal. He was pretty strong at passing. And that's my talent of the week, yes.
Rodrigo Martins of this Mafra side, who have been very impressive in the Taça de Portugal. And I think that it's interesting. They've actually been, you know, some similarities between Mafra and Estoril in terms of the run to the Taça de Portugal semifinals. Obviously, Estoril were doing better in the league last season, but interesting, it seems like Estoril actually want to sign him to replace Chiquinho. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that would be a very interesting move, very interesting step up for him at this point in his career. Without any further ado, thank you so much, Thiago, for coming on. It was a real pleasure to pick your brains on Portimonense. And yeah, where can people find you?
So the people can find me on social media. At first at Portimonense social media, the futsal social media, and the Portimonense football team Twitter. And can find me on Instagram, Thiago de Coimbra. And that's it. Thank you so much for this opportunity. The pleasure was all mine.